Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it was actually billed by CNN as the first Republican presidential debate. That's not exactly true. There was one in South Carolina a few weeks ago, but this is the first one with all the likely contestants for the Republican nomination in there. Mitt Romney wasn't there last time. Newt Gingrich wasn't there and so forth. So a fuller stage, and a couple of candidates like Gary Johnson would have liked the stage to have been just a little bit more crowded. But one bit of news from the debate, and that's this from Michelle Bachmann.
I just want to make an announcement here for you, John, on CNN tonight. I filed today my paperwork to seek the office of the presidency of the United States today.
Not a huge surprise. The fact that she was there pretty much suggested that she was probably interested in running for the job. I think the good martini out of this, Jim, and we'll have a couple of clips to highlight this, is just how these candidates refused to take the bait to go after one another and instead focused on why they're running, and that is to replace Barack Obama as president of the United States. In succession here, Gingrich, Romney, Pawlenty.
The Obama administration is an anti-jobs, anti-business, anti-American energy, destructive force.
We can't afford more federal spending. Secondly, it raises $500 billion in taxes. We didn't raise taxes in Massachusetts. Third, Obamacare takes $500 billion out of Medicare and funds Obamacare. We, of course, didn't do that. And finally, ours was a state plan, a state solution, and if people don't like it in our state, they can change it.
We took a different approach in Minnesota. We didn't use top-down government mandates and individual requirements from government. We created market alternatives and empowered consumers.
You could argue that Pawlenty there at the end was talking about both Obamacare and Romneycare. He probably was, but he did so pretty artfully, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and how that frustrated John King of CNN, the moderator of the debate. But, Jim, there'll be plenty of time for mudslinging and arrows later on in this presidential primary season, and they're bound to come. But overall, whether it was those candidates or Rick Santorum saying Obama has embraced our enemies and Herman Cain ripping Obama in all sorts of different ways, definitely kept on message, the Republicans did, that Obama's the problem and he's got to go.
Yeah, I think just about everybody helped themselves on that stage last night. I think that there were – when I talked to Republicans – they may have strong feelings about a particular candidate. Some of my readers can't stand Romney. Gingrich has come in for quite a bit of criticism lately, but very few folks want to see this turn into a demolition derby. They know that beating Obama, although it looks a little bit easier now than it did a few months ago, and if the idea of it, if the economy is struggling, it may not be as challenging as everybody expected. They don't like seeing Republicans beat each other's heads in, and they know that the mainstream media is just itching to write the, you know, Republican brawl storyline. So the fact that everybody kept their, you know, held back their fists from each other for the first night makes a lot of sense. A lot of people seem to think Pawlenty had hurt himself after using the Obamacare line and then not really, you know, repeating it last night. But let's remember, this is probably for a lot of Republicans the first time they've really spent a lot of time watching Tim Pawlenty. And Pawlenty probably made the calculation that he did not want to come right out of the gate looking like an attack dog. And I think there's a certain wisdom to it. Look, there will be more debates. There will be time for these guys to go after each other. And I think Pawlenty, you know, if he was the biggest loser of the night, then everybody was doing pretty good. This is, you know, he's still probably probably in that second, top second tier, bottom first tier category. And he has plenty of time to do everything else he need to do, and I think otherwise he made a pretty good impression.
That certainly was the main topic of conversation afterwards. I think just the fact that folks did keep their powder dry against one another meant that it was a good night for Romney, since he's the front runner, and he didn't really take much of a pounding, as a lot of folks have suspected. I think some of the lower-tier candidates at least got a little more recognition, especially Bachmann as kind of her coming out party. I thought Cain was okay. I thought he was better the first time. Santorum seemed a little bit more on the ball than he was last time as well. So, and in Gingrich, despite the horrific start to his campaign, was very pithy, pretty direct in how he not only took on Obama in a number of ways, but even took on John King, how King kind of assumed certain things as he brought up certain topics and kind of had a bias to those questions, which is obviously a pretty good segue to martini number two. And that is the deplorable format of this debate, and not to mention how John King handled that format. But to basically go out there and say you have a minute, the first person has a minute to respond, and everybody else has 30 seconds to respond. And by the way, how will you fix the economy in 30 seconds? You know, it's just completely ridiculous. Yet somehow, John King had time coming in and out of every break to ask the candidates whether they preferred Coke or Pepsi, Dancing with the Stars or American Idol, spicy or mild hot wing sauce, Johnny Cash or Elvis Presley. John King also had a bee in his bonnet over something else, and that, of course, was Tim Pawlenty not going after Mitt Romney more directly. And so when John King got upset about it, here's a couple of exchanges that he and Pawlenty had.
President Obama stood before the nation in 2008 and said he promised to do health care reform focused on cost containment along with Republicans. He'd do it on a bipartisan basis.
The question, Governor, was why Obamacare?
That's right. Well, I'm going to get to that, John.
You have 30 seconds, Governor.
Yeah.
And so he did get to it, but he didn't say Obamacare, so then John King had to come back with this.
You said you were asked a question, which is fair enough, but you chose those words. And so one of my questions is, why would you choose those words, maybe in the comfort of a Sunday show studio? Your rival is standing right there.
You said it before, Jim. The mainstream media's basic line is, why won't you guys fight? And so they was very, very upset, very disappointed when the mudslinging didn't start right away last night.
Greg, I'm trying to get my head around the idea. We have a two-hour debate, and these guys have to keep their answers to 30 seconds?
Right.
Really? You know, you realize we've gotten to the point where the one-minute YouTube video is now the long form of most candidates' answers? I am baffled. I am absolutely baffled by the idea that there's this quiz show format in which you're going to hear bells ringing or buzzers going off or something like that. Ideally, I understand you don't want a candidate to filibuster and to just talk on and on about an irrelevant topic or going off on segues or something. But the bottom line is, I think if nothing else, let the guy finish the sentence. Most of these topics require more than 30 seconds to explain a candidate's view. I went back and I looked back at the Iowa debate right at the end of 2007 when Fred Thompson basically said no hand shows. And the Des Moines Register editor wanted to have a show of hands on two yes or no questions at the same time. So I guess raise left hand for one and lower the right. Anyway, typically these debates, you know, the moderators and those who set up these systems of debates forget their purpose is to showcase the candidates. Put up questions to them and let them answer. The idea that, you know, we have to know about Starsky or Hutch or bacon or sausage or taupe or mauve or any one of these other, you know, silly questions, you know, was baffling. The topic selection was baffling. I detected a consistent theme of, as we sit around the mainstream media newsroom, we think you Republicans are weird on issues like abortion and gay marriage and separation of church and state. So, Republicans, why are you weird? As the definite subtext to a lot of these social issues, we're in year three of an economic recession. We're still in an extraordinarily dangerous world. The idea that we're going to be asking about gay marriage and gay adoption before Pakistan, Iran, the Middle East, and all of these other issues is just unbelievably perplexing to me. And I think says a great deal about CNN's sense of what their perception of what Republican voters want to know about instead of what Republican voters actually want to know about.
The fact that John King, even when he wasn't saying things, he was like muttering under his breath and so forth. Basically, if you weren't giving the answer that he wanted from you, he was really getting upset and really wanting to jump in there and steer you back to whatever it is he wanted you to say. It was very unprofessional, I thought, in terms of how they let that flow. Just very, very bizarre all the way around. Hopefully they'll get it right and get out of this kind of Twitter-type format where if you can't say it in a sentence fragment what your five-point policy is to create jobs, that somehow you're not qualified to be president. I think some people aren't qualified to run debates based on what we saw last night.
In three characters or less, please explain your job creation plan.
Well, fortunately, there are some people who are just so smart and so intelligent that they probably can do it in three characters or less. And, of course, that person is the current occupant of the White House, Barack Obama. At a California fundraiser, I guess this was just last night, Michelle Obama was out there because he's busy at fundraisers in Florida and now Puerto Rico today. Here's the quote that you have up on Campaign Spot today. He, meaning Barack Obama, reads every word, every memo. So he is better prepared than the people briefing him, she said. This man doesn't take a day off. How is he better prepared than the people briefing him? Apparently, he doesn't actually need help. These are just jobs he's created out of the goodness of his heart in order to help reduce our unemployment rate, because clearly he's able to do this all by himself and knows all.
If I were writing the headline for this, I would take this anecdote from Michelle Obama and reveal enormous amounts of the president's time are wasted since he already knows everything that his briefers are going to tell him. because he's just that smart. I, in the process of writing up this post, Greg, I came across a comment from a former ambassador to Pakistan who suggested that President Obama, by ordering the raid on bin Laden, showed as much courage as the Navy SEALs who actually executed the raid. So I think at some point, like, he's the smartest guy ever, and he's the bravest guy ever, Greg. We're so lucky to have him as president. And then the next thing, he doesn't take a day off. One, this is the same president who didn't talk to us for 3 days after somebody tried to blow up a plane over Detroit on Christmas Day.
Right.
Then he goes off to South America when we begin bombing Libya, and he says, I'll tell you about the war. I'm sorry, I'll tell you about the kinetic military action when we get back. He's always going out and doing campaign events, and you know, events that are seem more PR related instead of actual governance related. And of course, it's noted that he's played golf for 11 straight weekends. Now, obviously, I don't doubt that every single day that he's been president, that President Obama has done something work related. In that case, good. Crispy, which president has spent any day with absolutely no presidential duties whatsoever? Rutherford B. Hayes or something. I mean, it's certainly, you know, the modern presidency, yes, you do a little bit of time. But you look at the results this president is achieving. I don't think there's a great deal, you know, that this is, there's a lot to brag about. And so the idea that, look, maybe she's just saying, look, he's trying the best he can. This is all you can get out of him. He cannot try any harder. But the end result is that, you know, for all of the enormous stress the president's under, and he doesn't take a day, oh, it's working so hard, you know, he doesn't, as I note on Campaign Spot, he doesn't have to worry about paying the mortgage. He doesn't worry about a tough commute. He doesn't worry about a whole bunch of stuff that a whole lot of hardworking Americans have to worry about each day. So anything that comes from an incumbent president that smacks of whining is generally a bad sign. And I think this, you know, the line between bragging and telling us how fantastic he is and the line about, oh, how hard the job is. You know what? If the job is so hard, look, there are a lot of people we'd be very happy to replace him with.
Yes.
So let's not forget that he asked this job and spent about 2 years telling us how swell it was going to be. So, you know, a little bit less self-pity and a little bit more actual accomplishment.
Yeah, exactly.
Much appreciated here.
We heard from 7 people last night who would love to replace him. So
precisely.
Hopefully one of them will. Jim, very good. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.